I mean, Robert Pollack has got this amazing intelligence and IQ that he brings to music and to collaborations as well. And through understanding from years of working when it started way back on the East Coast, you learned how to survive, which is not easy as a musician, doing and getting grants so that you could put on performances. Because that's really the only way to survive if you're a musician, right?
Certainly for the modern
for
music
the, especially
and for,
classical.
For these so-called non-profit entities. You need to be able to get the grant money in order to sustain ourselves. So even the big, Metropolitan Opera, you name it, only gets about 40% from ticket revenues.
I didn't know that.
60% has to come again from corporations and
wow.
foundations and private individuals. So it's always been the case that, not that commercial type of arts organization needs the support of private individuals, private foundations, government to a certain extent. We now learn that the National Endowment for the Arts is on the cutting block again.
Are they on the cutting block
again? It's been the intention of certain factions to cut the NEA for years, but I fear that now it's much more likely that it could be entirely abolished, which would be very tragic, of course.
Well, you also
in
are brilliant.
Opinion.
Having been involved in appreciating music and creating music in words, I found that it's really interesting if a musician is able to collaborate like you do. It brings them to a forefront, unlike if they're just doing and trying to promote their own music.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you probably spend as much time, if not more, arranging and working for other musicians to perform than you do on your own music. Now, I know other musicians are aware that you're a fine pianist and have created quite a few pieces. However, when people think of you, they think of Ebb and Flow Arts and all the music, and they may not even think of you first as a cutting-edge pianist. And people will be able to see you play and a new premiere piece coming on Sunday, March 5th at 3 o'clock at the Castle Theater. And you're bringing in some fabulous musicians to play. And there'll be a world premiere for your piece and also a Hawaii premiere for another piece, correct?
The rest of the program, the rest of the other five pieces will be Hawaii premieres.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I have no
knowledge of them being played here ever before.
I know you brought in Iggy Jang before.
Oh, yeah. He's a co-founder of our Ebb and Flow Ensemble. So we gave our first concert as presented by the MAC in 2001. And since that time, we had the agreement that every 2 years, the MAC will present us as an Ebb and Flow Ensemble. So this will be in March, our ninth such presentation. Yeah.
And for those familiar with Ebb and Flow, I'd say 95% of your concerts are free. Mm. However, because this is at the MAC and is presented by the Maui Arts and Cultural Center, they're in charge of that, and there is a fee of $30 for this particular show. So just so you are aware, this is a special situation, and it really is lovely sometimes. I know you do so many shows at other locations, but it's lovely for you as well, of course, doing a premiere piece in the setting of that lovely stage and the acoustics kind of brings it into an environment of a different feeling. It kind of lifts it to a certain level of acceptance and importance in a way. Do you feel that
absolutely.
When you play at the Castle?
The Castle is a beautiful facility. It's wonderful acoustics, like you say. And it's just it has an excellent piano too.
What do you play, the Steinway?
Concert Steinway in very good shape.
Mm-hmm. Which is important.
Yeah.
What are you going to play?
So we have six pieces. We have a work for the varying combinations from flute, violin, viola, and piano. And
of course, people love violin and viola, and I happen to be a flute aficionado. With that combination and piano, you have a different energy you're playing versus other things. So when you created this piece, did you create it with that in mind?
Well, as I mentioned to you earlier, that we checked for pieces with that combination. Turns out there aren't any. There was one, but it was only in a MIDI version. Nobody had ever played it live.
Wow.
That I found on the internet. So this is one of the great challenges and joys of working in modern music, that we can actually create a repertoire that hasn't existed. So I've written a piece for the four of us, flute, violin, viola, piano. And it's 10 minutes, roughly. It's a somewhat energetic at times, very, very frenetic at times, but all guided for me by a kind of system of harmony that I've developed, in part connected to another piece on the program, the piece called Genen, G-E-N-E-N. It's Dutch for genes, like that perpetuate the species genes.
Not the jeans you wear.
That's right.
Okay.
And
you could perpetuate the species by wearing the right kind of jeans that you wear.
Maybe we should all wear blue jeans or something.
Right. So, Hanen, explain that again. It perpetuates.
Well, the title of the piece is that jeans.
Is jeans?
Yeah.
G E N E S.
In Dutch, it's G E N E N.
Oh, interesting.
And
so why did you use a Dutch title if you're American?
Well, it's not my piece. It's by Peter Schat, the Dutch composer.
Oh, that one.
And
okay.
I'm connecting my piece and its harmonic unfolding to the invention of this other composer, Peter Schat, which he called the tone clock.
I always feel like I'm on PBS when I talk to you. I kind of have this fantasy that I'm removed to this PBS classical music show, and I almost have to talk differently. And
well,
I feel so stupid,
you know,
because you're so well-educated in classical music. No, I mean
you're very well-versed in many fields and areas of music. So it's a privilege to be here, but... we wouldn't, on PBS, we wouldn't be discussing his music or the tone clock.
Why?
They don't touch that anymore.
Why?
Public radio.
Why not?
I go to the website, and it's all commercial music that they cover.
I didn't know that.
Very rarely they go into the sorts of music we touch on.
Wow.
So, yeah. So it's interesting how we can get the word out, but not necessarily through the channels you'd expect.
Well, what you're doing with this music, and I heard a little bit of it, is number one, this is very, a lot of the work you do is very intellectual, because you do have that mental feeling, but then you get out, you seem to, how do I say, not attack, but approach the emotional by the intricacy. Intensity, okay? I think you used a word before we began that I love, about intense. What was the other word?
Restraint. I was talking about the kind of the rehearsal conditions. But, I've often observed that people who say it's this music, quote, you know, that's a sort of a general note. I mean, some pieces on the program are very accessible right away.
Yes.
Very melodic.
I like that. I like
tonal.
Melodic. You know I like melodic.
And the piece by Jacques Ibert, for example, on the program for flute, violin, and piano is a lovely, beautiful, lyrical piece. And there's another work by a composer, Maurice Durufle. Again, a name we're not that familiar with, but he was a very distinguished French organist and composer, and his piece is also extremely melodic, although the harmonic part is a little bit, you know, more adventuresome than
most
of it.
I like that, adventuresome, you know. Okay, yeah.
But what happens is that people are projecting that notion of intellectual.
Because they have to think?
They're thinking. What's happening now? Why don't I recognize this? Why hasn't this happened? Why doesn't that return? So
he's using his hands. He's using his hands to actually describe the notes, almost like a conductor would, and he hit the microphone.
That's really helpful on the radio. To
I love
be
it.
Making hand
but
gestures.
But you know, you've got a very good point there. About
it's
music
the intellect
you don't know.
Of the listener
right.
battling to figure out what's going on instead of just listening and not letting any preconceived notion that it's intellectual, you know, affect how they feel about the piece.
So what happens to you, because you're performing and you can't just listen, but what happens to you when you listen to your pieces? What do you feel when you don't have to think about playing?
Mm-hmm. In a live performance?
No, just listening.
Or like a recorded performance?
Yeah.
Well, of course, it depends on the quality of the performance, right? Sometimes it's not quite as good. But I had an experience recently with a solo vibraphone piece of mine as performed in an edited recording session by a young fellow named Nathaniel Lee. He's out of the University of Georgia. And he took it upon himself to learn this piece. That was, I felt, a really very, very good mm-hmm. performance. Very
nice.
Careful, conscientious. And I feel proud of the piece.
Uh-huh.
I feel, I'm not obsessed with listening to my music over and over again. I don't tend to do that. But, listening a few times and really enjoying what he did with it. And so that's the lifeblood of a composer, right?
Is to, that in to a way that. It is, and people don't understand. It's certainly not about the money,
right.
And especially when you're doing something as esoteric as some of the pieces that you hear.
Mm-hmm.
But to have someone else find it and to play it and to record it, and to know that someone else is listening is very gratifying. And it's wonderful that you've actually developed an audience here on Maui. Mm. And a reputation, I'd say, and that's what develops that audience, of presenting really good quality music. Mm. And in this particular show on Sunday, March 5th at the beautiful Castle Theater at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you have some top-flight musicians. I think it looks like a gold flute that flautist is mm-hmm. holding. Is that Vivian Fine holding that?
That would be Susan McGinn.
Susan McGinn.
She is the principal flutist of the Hawaii Symphony.
She's a flautist.
Flautist.
Okay. I know, I play the flute.
Flautist.
She's a principal flautist. In the Hawaii Symphony.
Yeah.
And so she's played with Iggy.
Yes.
Quite not literally played with him.
They have. I've heard them in chamber music.
Musically,
together,
I'm talking
yeah.
about.
Yes.
And then, who's the other guy, violinist
so
here?
The other fellow is a viola player.
Viola player, okay.
Carlo Andrea Malanima. Now, he is the husband of Susan McGinn.
Okay.
So they recently got married, maybe 5-6 years ago.
Well, they definitely were playing together then.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, viola is a lovely, lovely instrument. Yeah. And when you combine it with flute, you have a lot of interesting energy going on there. And I think viola is so soulful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
if
you hear Yo-Yo Ma, it's like, did you happen to see
his cello.
Oh, take it back. Wrong.
But still, viola is, I agree, it goes lower than the violin. You know? And there's a duo on the program by Vivian Fine, the composer,
and
a wonderful American composer for flute and viola.
Wonderful.
And it's maybe of all the pieces, in some ways, it's the most, free and dissonant and wild and all the rest, because she was very much a modernist. She then became something of more conservative after studying with composer Roger Sessions. But at the end, towards the end, the last 20 years or so, she returned to her modernist tendencies. And
that's funny.
And she was also an excellent pianist, apparently, particularly for modern music. In the 30s and the 40s, I think, in New York City, she was the go-to pianist for modern music.
Really?
A highly gifted woman. And you can imagine in the 30s and 40s to break into an all-male, pretty much predominated scene.
You got to have some good chops and a lot of willpower, right?
Yeah.
And perseverance.
Abilities as a composer.
Absolutely.
So I've been long been an admirer of hers. She died tragically in a car accident in, I think it was 2003 or so, at the age of 84, or maybe died at 2000 year two, at the age of 84. She was dry. I don't know the circumstances. I'm actually somewhat curious in a maybe morbid kind of way. But she was driving with her sister, apparently, who also subsequently died.
She
taught for many years, Vivian, in Bennington College in Vermont.
Wow.
And so that's I'm very much looking forward, because it seemed like a natural.
Which piece is that?
That's the duo for
the duo with Vivian playing and her husband.
Susan and Carlo playing.
Oh yeah, it's by Vivian. It's played with Susan and Carlo.
Yeah.
You're doing your new piece, which is called
Metaphor.
I like that name. It's a good name.
Mm-hmm.
Metaphor is a perfect name for a piece.
I have many of them, that is, many metaphors. This is maybe my 14th or 15th one.
You've got 15 metaphors you put out?
Yes.
Wow. That's
over the years, yeah.
Wow, that's quite a library of metaphors.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it turns out that...
Did you ever do a CD of all your metaphors together? That's
no.
enough for just metaphors?
Yeah, that could be multi-volume. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Oh, interesting, because you do have a new CD out.
Yes. Evan Florence has produced its third CD. It's called Explorations. It's available on CD Baby and should be on other outlets, and we're working on that.
Repeat the name again?
Explorations.
Explorations.
And cdbaby.com. Uh-huh. One can go to the internet and download through purchase, you know, either single tracks or the whole volume. But it's also available on CD. If you're out there and interested, you can contact us, ebbandflowarts.org, for a copy of the CD. But we're sending it out, for example, to all the music libraries that we know of.
And I like that.
College Music Society has mailing lists like that. And
do you actually do it, or does some service do it for you?
You mean the actual mailing?
Yeah.
No, we do it. Yeah, here.
Well,
from
I'm
here.
Impressed.
Yeah, it's. Well, there are about 200 of them or so.
That's impressive that you're going to go to that mailing.
Yeah.
And that's expensive. That's not a cheap amount.
No, exactly. Yeah. One packet is $2.67.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the time and energy to go to do it and take it down to the... I mean,
yeah,
I think that's great.
Yeah, I feel it's a very good way to get the what we're doing out to the right places, you know.
Well,
to
part
the
of your legacy, I guess.
Exactly.
Because how many pieces have you now written?
It's about 135.
Not.
Yeah, 135
Robert,
pieces.
Robert, 135 pieces?
Mm-hmm.
My gosh, I am blown away. I've known you a long time. I had no idea you've written 135 pieces.
Yeah.
That's a
lot. That's not counting little incidental pieces. Like I've written a lot of birthday pieces, you know, short ones. But
you've never written me a birthday piece.
No, not yet.
Not yet. There's
when
still
is your
time.
Birthday?
It was last week.
Oh.
you have another
and I'd
year.
I have to know your age.
It was February 15th.
Okay. And I'd have to know your age because I usually base the piece somehow on the age number. The number.
Really?
Yeah.
Can I have mine as a metaphor? I want
for
a metaphor.
A metaphor for what?
Metaphor for my life. No, I am amazed. People don't realize. I mean, number one, okay, it's not just playing it. It's writing it out. And I'll tell you, for the life of me, Robert, mm-hmm. just to actually get it written out and to actually create the music and
the parts.
It's a lot of work.
It is.
And it's detail-oriented. It's time-consuming. And it drives me crazy.
Tens of thousands of little
I'm trying things. I got this words for a song, and I know it's going to be a good song. It's one of the better lyrics I've ever had for a song. So, you know, it's easy for me to get lyrics. And then I said, okay, I better write a song. So I got something, and I got my Sibelius. You familiar with Sibelius program? Okay, I know there's a way for me to hook my Sibelius up to the computer. Okay, a day of that, I got it. Okay,
right.
there's a way to get the words tied in. But now I have the notes, but they don't even have the time frame on them, so I got to make sure each note's right.
Yeah,
and it's like, oh, each time it's like people don't know what it takes. And when you do a whole thing with the whole orchestra, I mean, it's not like doing a rock piece. It's a symphonies are huge amounts.
Yeah.
So that 130 pieces, I applaud you.
Thank you.
I bow to you. I'm bowing to you.
It's not a, you know, let's face it, for example, Lou Harrison and Per Norgaard, who was here with us some years ago, I think he has over 400. So,
you
know, it's relative.
If you do one a day.
Then again, you know, some of the renowned composers have written only 30 or 40.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends. But yeah,
but
I feel
what's
pretty
important
good
about is
that.
Not just people can hear the Hawaii premiere of you doing your piece.
Uh-huh.
And it's not just you solo piano. It's with the viola and the flute.
I'm strictly
I'm
strictly accompanying this time. There are no solos in this concert.
Uh-huh.
It's all either duos, trios, or this quartet.
Mm-hmm. And so they get a chance to hear the premiere and appreciate the fact that, you know, here you are recognized by a lot of these musicians as I said earlier, a good pianist, a great pianist, and also a great composer. And I mean, and here I'm trying to just change the focus of everyone knowing you as just Ebb and Flow Arts and putting on these great concerts to that, you know, you are a very good composer and of, now I realize, 130 pieces worth. And that's something to really, you know, I'd say to honor. I know Maui has a lot of great musicians in all kinds of fields, right? When I was at the Grammys last week, I had a chance to meet Kalani Pea. And he just got his Grammy on his first at the age of 30. His first CD out, he gets a Grammy, and he has all these amazing people recognizing him. And then there's all the great musicians like Mick Fleetwood, which we're going to have something about the show coming up tonight a little later, and many others that live here. But for classical, and to represent the classical and modern music, I mean, you on this island are really a stand-up guy who's created all this great, you know, wonderful, cutting-edge classical music in 130 pieces. So I'm just trying to recognize that.
We're also statewide. I think we're the only modern music, you know, organization or ensemble or presenter statewide of this kind of music. So it's...
And it's, you know, it's interesting because it sometimes takes people a lot, like you say, you use your mind because you're learning, right? And it takes people a lot to recognize. This isn't necessarily, you're certainly not going for commercial recognition on this. I mean, I think the only time you probably get paid on the played on the radio is when we do it in one of these things or if you're on some show. I probably could do a minute of this. I think we'll...
Oh, the Ibert?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's the first piece here?
This is the two interludes by Jacques Ibert that will be on the program.
This, Robert?
It's a beautiful piece.
It's beautiful. Who's doing this on the... The whole group is doing this?
you know, I didn't bring the names of the performers, unfortunately.
No, but this I mean, on the show, you're going to be doing...
Yeah, this will be Iggy, Susan, and myself.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I like
it's a
this.
Tree. It's a lovely
piece. But see,
piece.
This is melodic.
Yes. So we...
this has actually got a lovely melody.
Something for everyone... in the 20th century music, you know.
Yeah, well, and 21st century.
And 21st, yeah.
Did you write this piece this year? You
yeah,
did.
Yeah,
so it's definitely 21st century.
21st century. So, yeah, and...
Can you hum a few bars of your piece?
No.
I'm joking, I'm sorry. No, people know.
Yeah, yeah. But, no, I mean, it's going to give... You know, our role is curatorial, not profitorial, as I like to say. Yeah, so we present
a
whole...
Wait a second, explain that. You just threw that line out there. Curatorial, not professorial.
Profitorial.
Profitorial.
That's just making
well, professorial and profitorial could be
too.
Very close, and this P-R-O-F might be some similarity on
right,
that.
Right.
But no,
but,
typically...
You know, we present the range, and it's a wide range of compositional approaches, you know? So you have this piece by Ibert.
You're a curator.
Yeah, like in a museum, let's say.
It is,
You know, and as you've said, I play an active role as artist, composer, and, you know, pianist. It's part of my job. That's what my salary, what that it is, you know, entails. But there's also an ethical line that I tend to try not to cross, which is to have my own thing every time, all the time, on Ebb and Flow.
No, you don't. I've known because I've had a chance to interview with almost every single event. In a few minutes that we have, I believe, remaining, if my guest comes in on time, we want to talk about something else coming up. I just will wind up this section by saying, again, that's going to be happening. This Ebb and Flow Ensemble is Sunday, March 5th at 3 o'clock, and I like that time.
Yeah.
You know, personally, because, you get back in time for 60 minutes. And it's a Sunday night, and people don't go out Sunday nights. You're through by 5 o'clock, right?
Oh, yes.
And you'll be able to, this particular one, there is a fee on, and I think it's a nice payback because you do so many, the majority of your shows are all free. But on this one, there is a fee because it's being put on by the MAC, and they're presenting it. And so that's nice. And you are going to have, and I do want to mention this before we close on this section. Mm. You're going to have a pre-concert discussion at 2, and those are always very interesting.
Yeah.
That's really something that people can really get a greater understanding and depth of understanding by going at 2 o'clock and find out what's really going on, right?
Exactly. We'll go over each
piece.
It's
the Cliff Notes.
Kind of, yeah. Give you a little in-depth on each of the pieces. Let's say the tone clock, for example, of Peter Scott, or the harmonies of the Duraflay, or something about my piece, and so on. And I'll have at least one of the performers with me to discuss their side of it, their challenges. And so, and I'm happy to be working with this violist, Carlo. He's very enthused about modern music, particularly American modern music. So he's been really enjoying this challenge, and I'm looking forward to working with him. We've not worked together before, but I'm sure it's going to be great.
Well, and it is always interesting. And I have to say, when you know you're going to be playing at the Castle and you got a big event like this, you work extra hard. You do extra practicing, and you do extra rehearsing, and you know, it's like having an art show. You put your best work out there, you
know? That's right, yeah.
And as I said, it's always nice to have someone applaud your work, because a lot of times you don't get that in your work. And I think it is great that you figured out a way that people can recognize this music, and you can also play your music, because I don't know, unless you're a musician, you don't realize how difficult it is to actually put on an event, to put on a show, to get the publicity, to do the whole thing. You know, there's people that come in that definitely have their people do their stuff for them, but you're doing this all yourself.
Pretty much. Well, we have good volunteers, and we have a very proactive board, and that all helps.
And your wife helps.
And my wife has really been, you know, indispensable, or you might say, or, you know, totally invaluable all these years.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, for the reception, she's created after
baked and cooked and greeted
for all the other things she does. And so, yeah, but it's true. I do a lot of it. I'm the only paid staff person in Ebb and Flow. And one of the reasons we've made it this long is probably because of that low overhead, so to speak.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
I definitely do. Yeah. Are you nonprofit?
Yeah.
Yay.
501c3, yeah.
Well, that's wonderful.
That enables us to apply to all these foundations. And
again, just doing that is a lot of work, and just keeping that up and always, you know, keeping track of
maybe
that.
I should say we're supported by the Hawaii State Foundation on Culture and Arts, the Edward T. Cone Foundation, the Makana Aloha Foundations, Kasasa Foundation, ABC Stores, the AHS Foundation.
How did you get ABC Stores?
ABC Stores. There's a private foundation run by the Kasasa family, the owners of ABC Stores. It's a philanthropy.
How did you find that out?
I don't know. I know I had kind of direct contact with Mr. Kasasa at one time because he's a major philanthropist for the arts. He almost single-handedly rescued the bankrupt Honolulu Symphony.
Nice.
Yeah. And he is now the president of their board, and the president of the board, I believe, of the Hawaii Community Foundation.
Wow.
So he's a very powerful figure in the arts and in philanthropy in Hawaii. And so one, you know, you run across that. Kind of, and we're always
That's
running
amazing.
Across others. We just bought a Honda, and I checked out. They're owned by this major Fortune 500 company called Lithia. It's on the mainland.
Hmm.
And so I was checking the website. Sure enough, they have a philanthropy for arts education.
Who would have guessed that?
You always turn up things, and then typically other things fall by the wayside. So I won't name the foundation, but, you know, it funded us for 5 years, and they said, that's enough. Well, we've given you seed money now. Please become self-sustainable, whatever that means. But I think
it
that
means if you're cut off, means what it means. No more money.
It means find some other sources, right. Please. You know, without perfectly understandable. But though, so things fall away, but others turn up, and literally there are thousands of these smaller family foundations around, not in Hawaii, but nationally.
Well, I applaud that because the truth is, bottom line is, that this wouldn't happen unless you were able to do that. And music is an energy force that transforms and inspires people's lives. And bottom line is, without it, there's something in our soul that misses
out,
you know? And so anytime someone is supporting the arts and the music, as you are, I mean, like I say, I honor and recognize them and do anything I can to try to support them, because it really adds to the entire island. It adds to our enjoyment of music, and it educates us and inspires us. So I'm really excited and I applaud you for doing this one. Moving on to the next event, I had a chance to talk to Tom Vendetti a few weeks ago. Tom and I have known each other, my gosh, for years. I think I first met him when we went to Tibet with the group that he had. Back in 1997.
Wow.
And of course, he's done all these amazing films. But last year, you did this. Hi there. Oh, good. I'm glad you made it. Come on in. Good, good, good. Come on in. I want to introduce you to a really great sax player. Robert Pollock is Ebb and Flow Arts. And he's been putting
Let me get you
on the mic there and pull that mic in close so we can hear you. And Tom is here. Hi, Tom. Get the mic close to you.
How are you?
Yeah. There you go. He does amazing cutting-edge classical music and has been doing it for years here since 1997 on the island.
1999.
Yep. And he provides free concerts most of the time, and so it's very cool. So, and he's composed 130 piano pieces.
Well,
and orchestrates.
Actually, yeah, more than just piano, yeah.
More than piano, symphonies as well.
I have some orchestral pieces, but
and
mostly
how many,
chamber
and
music.
How many metaphors?
About 14 of them.
14 metaphors. He likes calling these pieces metaphors.
Metaphor,
not metaphors. there's just metaphor. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, and we look forward to this event on March. That's a Sunday, March 5th at 3 o'clock, Ebb and Flow Ensemble at the Maui Arts and Cultural Center, and a premiere for your piece. Good on you for doing what you're doing, Robert.
Well, thank you, Cindy.
It's always a pleasure talking with you. I always learn a little bit more about music, and I like this piece that you've come.
Yeah, the Ibera. Lovely.
It's very nice.
Yeah.
It's you know, you need to put some words to it, and a little bit of drums
I think it started as an incidental music to a theater production. And it's a strange. It has more versions of it than I've ever seen a piece. I mean, there's not only the flute, violin, piano. It's actually for flute, violin, harpsichord. But if you go to
YouTube, I can hear harpsichord on that.
If you go
definitely
to YouTube,
harpsichord would be
there
cool
are versions
on that,
yeah. For oboe, flute, piano, clarinet, flute, piano, two violins, piano, two flutes. I've never seen a piece so transcribed. I wonder if Ibera is turning in his grave or doesn't really mind.
Well, you know what? If it's something that works and people want to do it, I think it's great, right?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously,
it does.
It's living its own life here, and
there is a harpsichord on Maui. We're trying to maybe manage it, but I don't know.
It'd be kind of nice with harpsichord, huh?
It would be.
Yeah, I can almost think of it in Austria and Vienna there with the old harpsichord being pulled out, right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Robert. Thank you for the CD.
Thank you, Cindy.
And again, the CD is called Explorations, Ebb and Flow Arts, and it's out on CD Baby.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find it there with 14 pieces? Yeah, kind
of. 14 tracks.
I think
there are, what, six pieces on there.
All right. Well, good. Yeah. Good on you for getting that out. Thank you so much, Robert.